Greek Politics Specialist Group for accepting my paper. What I'm going to focus on is several kinds of transformations that have affected the Greek political system during the past 10 or 15 years. Furthermore, I purport to discuss the role of populism in the contemporary Greek post-democratic context. Starting with a brief account of the consolidation of democratic politics in post-authoritarian Greece, I then move to highlighting certain signs of post-democratic change that emerged especially after 1996. The years from 1996 to 2009 seem to form a distinct period in the Greek post-authoritarian political and social history, a period characterized by the end of strong traditional political identifications of the right and left, and the formation of a new consensus at the center. The consensus in its turn triggered a variety of populist reactions, varying from the extreme and religious right to the radical left. All these populist reactions, and also the counter-reactions they generated, raised critical questions. What is the role of populism in contemporary established democracies, and particularly in Greece? And what is its relation to the so-called consensus at the center? Is populism some sort of malaise of democratic politics, or maybe a perennial possibility? We will seek to address these questions by moving at first at a more abstract theoretical level, and afterwards through the encounter with relevant empirical examples. So, some remarks on the theory of post-democracy as developed by Colin Crouch, theorists like Chantal Mouffe, Jacques Rancière, and others. It has almost become a cliché in the relevant literature to note that actually existing established democracies are going through a gradual but rather steady transition or even transformation to something different from what we traditionally call democracy. Whether we call it a turn or a transition, examples of this process are well identifiable within contemporary established democracies. Basic characteristics of this post-democratic transformations are the decline of forms of collective regulation and control of the market, the marginalization of trade unions, economic globalization and the normalization of the practices and ideology of neoliberalism, the alienation from politics and the rise of various forms of political cynicism, the replacement of politics by passionless administration, and last but not least, the reduction of politics to a consumerist logic resembling to an advertising one. All of these symptoms, characteristics, are parts of a general logic, a particular dominating discourse, that tries to repress or even eliminate the ontological primacy of the political, that is, the dimension of antagonism. This demonic logic, this discourse, in its current guise, acquired an anti-populist scent, which, in Jacques Rancière's words, serves as the causes of a political theoretical justification needed to found the idea that we don't have an alternative. However, let us not visualize a romanticized past. Was there ever a thriving Western democracy? Rather not. Nevertheless, we have seen a certain blossoming of democratic life through the reinforcement of political participation and the broadening of the democratic arena, mass participation in unions and political parties, the rise in the 30 golden years of the social democracy and the welfare state, and so on. This particular course towards the realization of a democracy to come has somehow been blocked, or even worse, reversed in a way even more accelerated by the global economic crisis. In this context, populism plays a controversial but still crucial role and occupies a significant part of public debate in most European countries. On the one hand, it seems to present the real alternative, a passionate opponent to the post-democratic consensus. On the other hand, it seems to have an ambiguous content and a hazy relation with a wide range of phenomena. What is puzzling is that technocratic elites all over Europe tend to stigmatize as populistic any form of opposition, marginalizing in this way political struggle and dissensus. So what exactly is it that we mean by speaking about populism? Roman said some things. I'm going to take another approach as it is characterized a formal approach or an ontological approach based on Ernesto Laclau, who avoids attributing certain social and ideological contents to populism, and has developed an influential work on the phenomenon that has provided us with a coherent analytical body of theory and methodology that is founded on discourse theory as developed by the Essex School. So, according to a discourse analytic perspective, populism is a certain political logic, a type of discourse characterized by the emergence of equivalencies, popular subjectivity, the dichotomic construction of the social around an internal frontier, and the discursive construction of an enemy. As such, it cannot be a priori recognized as something good or bad, since the ontological presumptions cannot be reduced or equated to the contingent specific content. An ontological approach of populism, therefore, helps us escape the various problems and dead ends that other approaches encounter when moving strictly at the ontological level of analysis. A crucial element in the formation of a populist rupture is the way the various subjects are articulated and are collectively opposed to the common other. This logic can be described as a logic of equivalence. There is one in which all the demands, in spite of their differential character, tend to re-aggregate themselves, forming an equivalential chain. Populism then, conceived as a dichotomic view of society and therefore as a birth process of a collective us against them, is a core element of the ontological dimension of the political. Should that lead us in declaring populism synonymous with politics? The answer for Ernesto Laclau can only be affirmative. Of course, such a move is not without its antinomies and paradoxes, on which Yannis Stavrakakis has already made some critical remarks. An emphasis on the ontological level and the kind of slippage between the two levels of analysis can easily lead to reductionism. Identifying the ontological presumptions of populism with those of politics cannot mean necessarily that we expand this identification to the ontical level, since the particular contents of a given discourse may differ depending on the specific context. So let us pass now to the Greek case. This recent democratic history is very strongly related with populism. Almost any book, article or paper referring to Greece's recent social and political history must, to some extent, get involved with the various aspects and manifestations of the phenomenon. PASOK arose in early post-authoritarian Greece as a response to a hegemonic crisis, and ever since it has dominated the country's political life. It managed to present itself as the continuation of the radicalization of broad masses of population in the late 60s, which was interrupted by the seven-year military junta. Putting an end to a long-lasting post-civil war regime, it managed to express and legitimize a wide range of collective subjects that were excluded from the political arena. The archetypal populism of Andreas Papandreou, PASOK's first leader, was a core element in this new hegemony, since it gave the power to the leader of PASOK of interpolating a new historical political subject, the non-privileged, the new unified and undifferentiated people of the Metapolitευση. Metapolitευση is the term used in Greek to signify the transition from dictatorship to a multi-party democracy, and it signifies not only the moment of transition, but also the era that this moment initiated. So PASOK's populism was never seriously challenged until 1996, when Konstantinos Simitis succeeded Andreas Papandreou as head of the party. To some commentators, like Christos Lirigis, this change in leadership and the obvious shift in PASOK's discourse and political style signaled a passage from populism to modernization. Already by 1993, clearer signs of change in the ways political parties operate in Greece were already starting to show. The tones of political competition were more subdued. The role of mass media and pre-electoral mobilization was significantly increased. Passionate politics and clear-cut differences between the left and right were blurred. And PASOK, when in power again, steadily abandoned its socialist past, moving towards a third-way logic. To put it briefly, the modernization project and the modernization vision was based on a political program of mass privatizations, a technocratic and rather pragmatic style of politics, and the vision of Europeanization of the Greek society. The discourse of modernization claimed to transcend all divisions and to construct a new political subject on the basis of a pragmatic pursuit of progress. The emphasis on consensus, shared also by the Conservative Party, New Democracy, blurred the differences between the two major political parties. The repression of collective passions that were mediated in the mainstream political arena and the dominance of a technocratic discourse eventually led to the accumulation and channeling of these passions in other directions. Occasional explosions of collective passions, like the ones that Gerovinos talked about, could be regarded here as a filling of the gap that is left by the absence of politics. Let us recall the display of such collective passions in the last 10-15 years on various occasions. First, the massive gatherings and celebrations at the center of big cities when Greece won the European Football Championship in 2004, the massive rallies organized by the Greek Orthodox Church as a reaction to the exclusion of religion from ID cards in 2000, the massive and rather heteroclite rallies for Abdullah Öcalan in 1999, and last but not least, the various nowadays attacks on immigrants. And these, of course, are only a few examples. In such gatherings or violent outbreaks, the individualized postmodern subject citizen, being alienated from other collective forms of participation and expression, seems to desire what is lacking, a coherent identity, a concrete identity. This post-political shift that we talked about didn't mark only PASOK's discourse and practices, since the Party of New Democracy also gradually changed its discourse and program and moved towards a center-right politics in which the signified consensus holds a central position. In this, it is her characteristic that its new strategy since the year 2000, which eventually brought the party to power in 2004, was called the Middle Ground Project. So by the end of the 90s, both major political parties had developed a moderate managerial and minimalistic political discourse reflecting a clear convergence, which by the elections of 2009 and since today hadn't changed significantly. Now, 20 years after the decline and eventual corrosion and disappearance of PASOK's first ideal type populism, which proved to be decisive in many respects, populism continues to play a crucial role in the public, social and political life of Greece. The term is used and debated extremely often by politicians, journalists and academics who are using and misusing it to refer to all kinds of things. And nowadays, under the shadow of the debt crisis, populism has re-emerged as a great plague, some sort of cancer that has affected every aspect of our democracy. In the past few years, we have repeatedly heard the former Prime Minister Kostas Karamanlis stressing the basic dilemma for the country as such. I quote, "The strategic options are two. Either we succumb to populism or we dare make some tough decisions." End of quotation. As if populism were a permanent temptation, a continuing and persistent stimulus to derogation from a mainstream rational policy. It is worth remembering that a few years ago, during the 8 years of PASOK's modernization project, the dilemma seemed to be condensed in the phrase modernization of populism, condemning in the same way as reactionary populist any opposition to the government's plans. The term then, populism, in contemporary Greece, when used in public debate and within a specific kind of polemics, is rather hazy and often interrelated with a wide range of policies, ideologies, etc. To put it in other words, those very political forces that presented themselves in recent years as the leaders of an anti-populist campaign, PASOK and New Democracy, are the same political forces that played a central role in the shift of the Greek political system towards a post-democratic orientation. It seems then that there are indications of interconnection between those post-political directions, post-democratic directions, and the emergence of a plethora of new populist phenomena in the country. Empirical examples from the last decade are indicative. Some of them are the following. The religious populism of the then Archbishop Christodoulos in response to the identity crisis in 2000, the political discourse articulated by the leader of New Democracy, Kostas Karamanlis, during the pre-2004 period, which constituted a rather atypical anti-modernization populism, the xenophobic right-wing neo-populism of the radical right party Laos, which in Greek means the people, the radical left populism of a political coalition called Syriza, a coalition of the radical left, and of course PASOK's newfound populism, on which I don't have the time to talk about. Here we shall briefly examine three cases, or if you like, three moments. The first reaction, the first populist reaction in summer of 2000, with a clear anti-modernization view, was the religious populism of the then Archbishop Christodoulos. Reacting to the government's plan to remove religion from the ID cards, the Greek Church, under the charismatic leadership of Christodoulos, raised massive rallies and even gathered about 3 million signatures asking for a referendum on the optional inclusion of religion in Greek ID cards. Christodoulos condemned the atheist and corrupt elite of the modernizers as an anti-popular and anti-national oligarchy in great distance from the people, and presented the church as a true way out, as a real alternative. Christodoulos' populism was apolitical or even anti-political in terms that it called for a withdrawal from politics and the return of the people to the church's flock, redefining the people as the people of God and substituting the legitimization of representative institutions with that of godly authority. Another claimant of the people's voice was to be found with a radical right face. Giorgos Karatzaferis, a former deputy with the Party of New Democracy, became the founder and since today the leader. In 2000 he founded the party of a new political party named Laos, and articulated an almost ideal type neo-populist right-wing discourse, following his European ancestors like Le Pen or Haide. Karatzaferis' style and discourse can be vividly described by quoting a passage written about 10 years ago to describe Le Pen. I quote, he brings to the political debate in the ingredients that have long been banned from the scene: passion, conflict, wit, playfulness, exaggeration, a willingness to name the enemy. Laos claimed again Greece for the Greeks and called the people for a pan-national rally against alien and inland elites, against immigration, against the Islamic danger, and so on. Laos presented itself as a party, I quote from Laos program, in rupture with all parties that ruled our country in recent years, and that seeks to overthrow the current two-party system that reflects the failure of politics and is leading the Greek society in a state of decadence. Laos is articulating an anti-establishment, anti-consensus discourse, demanding the power to be brought back to the common people, where the signifier of the people signifies the Greek nation. To explain the emergence of such a discourse, we can quote Chantal Mouffe's remarks. I quote, the attraction exerted by right-wing populist discourse is the very consequence of the end of politics zeitgeist which prevails nowadays. Of course, this political vacuum, this gap, isn't susceptible only to right-wing discourse and can be filled by discourses of all kinds of orientations. Such a different type of populist reaction appeared in a radical left guise after 2003, when there was a leadership change in the party of Synasπισμός, party of the radical left, which was a key component in the electoral alliance called Syriza. Alekos Alavanos, a former member of the European Parliament, was elected president of the party and consequently leader of Syriza, of the coalition. In his very first public intervention as a candidate for Synopsis-Mos presidency, it was clear that he was going to adopt a more passionate and rather populist discourse than his ancestor. He called for a popularization of the party, a return to the people, or, as he called it, a repatriation. Strategically crucial in this task was, according to Alavanos, the connection of Syriza with the youth, conceived as a new political subject. So the return to the people acquired here the meaning of a turn to the country's youth. 3 years later, Alavanos' turn to youth found its incarnation in the face of Alexis Tsipras, a 33-year-old member of the party. Tsipras succeeded Alavanos as president of Synaspismos, becoming the youngest ever president of a Greek parliamentary political party. Syriza's discourse didn't significantly change under the leadership of Tsipras. So to conclude, as we have seen, the decline of PASOK's first archetypal populism and its shift from the socialist populist period to a modernizing one was followed by the rise of various anti-establishment or anti-consensus populist reactions. In our paper we refer to three specific moments that mark distinct types of populist discourse and which of course aren't the only cases in the period. However, those cases are populism in opposition and not in power. These reactions can be seen as the nemesis of consensual politics, a return of the repressed in the guise of a populist rupture. So I'm going to stop here. Thanks very much.